lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And Janice.
This is Song Talk Yay! Radio for May the 24th, 2016, live on CJRU, 1280 AM, The Scope at Ryerson in Toronto, Canada. Song Talk is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of, guess what? Songwriting.
Ooh, I thought it was baking.
Yeah, that too. Songwriters can be fresh newbies or established professionals. During the show, we share tips, tools, and techniques, and together, we all become a little bit better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me tonight are the medicinal members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team.
So we're good for you?
We have Benel and Bruce.
Hi.
That's Bruce, clear in his throat. Fentanyl Phil.
That's me.
So Bruce tastes bad, but he works.
But he works, yeah. And handling our onslaught of social media, Januvia Janice.
Oh, hello there.
Januvia, hey, in case you're wondering, is a blood sugar medication. And we want to send out good vibes to our tech person, Nicole DiDonato, who's busy with final exams this week. So.
Yeah, she's actually studying.
She's actually studying.
Very good.
Doing real work as opposed to here. And don't forget, we always love hearing from you, so please send your thoughts, complaints, corrections, and care packages to feedback at songtalk.ca for the old-fashioned email. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Song Talk Radio. Please subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and leave us a review, 4 stars and up only, please. Finally, don't forget to stop by our website at songtalk.ca to listen to archives of the show, subscribe to our monthly newsletter, and check out our resources for songwriters page. You can also submit your song to become a guest on the show. Tonight, we have no guest.
Yes.
Tonight is just the family. It's a very special theme show episode of Song Talk Radio. Tonight, we're going to be talking about song structures.
Yes.
So Bruce, Phil, and I have each selected a song or two that we feel has interesting or unusual song structure, something that breaks out of the typical sort of verse, chorus, bridge, chorus.
That's structure. True. But before we get into that, Neil, I think we need to talk about the big news of the day.
The big news of the day.
Which is the Tragically Hip's frontman, Gord Downie.
Yes, is diagnosed with
terminal brain cancer. That is just terrible.
Yeah, 52 years old.
He's 52?
Yeah, he's way too young.
Wow, that is so surprising.
But, I mean, on the upswing, apparently there's been reports that the tumor was diminished in recent time. Something like that. And they're going on tour. Like, he's apparently full of energy, and he's just like, let's do it.
I think he's someone who doesn't get knocked down easily. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's so sad at the age of 52, and the fact that it's terminal, I mean, that just must be, well, of course, all life is terminal, but I mean, to know that would just be tough. I've always respected them a lot, although I've never been a huge Tragically Hip fan myself, but I gotta say, that song, Bob Cajun.
Yeah.
I think maybe one of the greatest Canadian songs, because it's a song that's Canadian, but it doesn't talk about Canada in terms of the Rockies or the train. It's kind of like this sort of urban kind of Canada, but that's not city specific. But I mean, some of the lyrics in that, it's just, as I said, I'm not a huge Tragically Hip fan, but the first time I heard that, I was just so blown away. It is just an amazing piece of lyric writing, because Gord Downie does something really interesting with his lyrics. I don't know if you noticed, he extends words that really shouldn't be extended.
Oh, I've never noticed that.
Yeah, he'll do like, because you know people would extend like O's and vowels because vowels are easy to extend. He'll do things like time, and he does these things where he takes
a word that
doesn't actually wouldn't normally extend and extends
and on the consonant.
Yeah, which is really different.
Pretty neat, yeah,
but it's with Bob Cajun, I mean, it's just a perfect song. I mean, just I saw the constellations reveal themselves one star at a time. I mean, what a it's just one of those songs I listen to, and I wish I'd written that. It's just such a perfect song, and I think it's one that's going to be really judged. Like, I think in like 30 years, people are going to see that as sort of the masterpiece that it is.
Yeah.
But I think
to a large extent they already do. I mean, a lot of Hip songs are regarded as classics, right?
Yeah, but I think that one really stands out above, and I think, you know, I think it kind of got lost a bit when it came out, because it should have just been like their best known song. because it is such a strong, like, it is a perfect pop song from top to bottom. There's not a sloppy lyric. There's not a there's not a forced line. Just a beautiful
great name
piece
for
of
a
work.
Band too. When you think about it, Tragically Hip.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah, it's kind of fun. Yes. They've been around a long time, huh?
20 years
oh,
plus.
Yeah. In fact, the band
thirty years, I think. Yeah,
the Hookers used to actually rehearse in the same place.
Wait, you'll have to explain that.
Oh, the Parkdale Hookers, my band, used to rehearse in the same place that the Tragically Hip did, which was Scott B's rehearsal studio, which was at Queen and Richmond.
Okay.
And a lot of Toronto bands rehearsed there in the basement.
I thought the Hip was located out of town.
They're originally from Hamilton, apparently.
Oh,
are they?
That's what someone told me. Again, I don't know that much about them.
Okay.
Steel Town. I thought it was Bob Cajun.
No, yes. Might have been there.
Peterborough.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you. Exactly.
Yes, our condolences go out to Gord Downie, his family, and and all the fans, because I know they have very dedicated fans.
Best wishes for a great tour.
Yes, it's going to be an amazing, tour, I think.
Okay, great. Okay, so I just want to start with a question for everyone in the room here. Janice, you can contribute to this conversation as well, of course, because you are a songwriter as well. Do you guys consider the question of structure when you're writing a song? Like, do you say, I'm going to adopt a different structure for so-and-so reason? Or do you just go with the default kind of thing?
Go ahead, Phil.
I tend to, I really get stuck in the verse-chorus, bridge, verse-chorus, end. Classic song structure, especially when I'm writing kind of popish songs.
Right.
If I'm doing kind of more electronica stuff, I try to kind of go out of that a bit, but I have to admit, even in my electronica stuff, it's still very often kind of formatted that way.
Is that instrumental electronica stuff?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a lot easier to break out of structure.
Yeah,
You're instrumental.
You know, well, it's interesting, as we were selecting songs, there were some sort of songs that sort of were kind of unusual structures, but they're instrumental songs, and I think that's a very different kind of songwriting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Okay.
Janice, have you purposely ever, like, said, I'm going to try a different structure for this tune, starting from that point of view?
That's a good question. I think overall, no, I usually do not. I usually just write kind of whatever comes to mind. I think my biggest sort of thing that I avoid is writing bridges. And I know every time I come here on the show as a guest, you guys are always talking about, well, that could use a bridge. And so I think it would be kind of cool for me to write a song with at least putting a bridge in there in mind. Because I almost feel like I cop out a bit in terms of adding a bridge. So that would be an interesting exercise for me, doing something different.
I tend to not be so concerned about structure, in the sense that I'm really lyric focused. And I know when I started writing more seriously back in 1994, I was just so excited to have a lyrics and melody come out that I just sort of poured it into a template I knew, because I had studied music for a long time by writing parody lyrics for songs. I did that for years, and I had to really understand structure.
Well, of course, yeah.
I naturally just went to a pop or folk song structure, sometimes just ABAB, and left it at that. But, you know, when you raise that issue, it's something I think I will try next time. It's a great challenge, I think, for any songwriter to say, what if I wrote it like that? You know,
yeah.
Different.
Yeah. Well, it's, you have to kind of force yourself out of these ruts, you know, like changing the tuning of your guitar or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time, at least more recently for me, because I'm same like Phil, like years ago, he wrote instrumental music, which the structure is not, hardly comes into the equation, really. You're just kind of writing freely almost, even though there is repetition and that sort of thing. It's not necessarily verse chorus as a normal kind of pop song type structure.
Right.
But even more recently, I mean, I do consciously go to the typical structure if I think the narrative warrants it, and I'll go outside of that structure if I think the narrative warrants it.
Okay, so the structure serves the song.
The structure has to serve the song, for sure. You're not going to break out a structure just for its own sake, I don't think.
So what's this first song that we're going to be...
It's something you may have heard of, some of you out in listener land. I Left My Heart in San Francisco. This was written in the fall of 1953 in Brooklyn, New York, by two writers you probably don't know, George Cory, C-O-R-Y, and Douglas Cross. They're both born in 1920. So at that point, they were, what would that be, 1920 to 53? They were 33, probably in their prime as writers. And this is known as the signature song of Mr. Tony Bennett. It was released on Columbia Records in 1962. and well, much later, 1962, and it peaked at number 19 on the Billboard charts, and it's been his standard. It's also been adopted as one of the official anthems of the city of San Francisco.
Which makes sense.
Not surprisingly. Yeah.
You know, because it doesn't work as well for Seattle.
Well, you know? They tried it, Phil, and it just didn't work. But, what I want to set up here for the listeners at home listening tonight or in the future is that there's this song structure which you might call a prologue verse. And what happens, it's very common in musical theater and very common in a certain era of songwriting, which was the 40s and 50s. And what it is it's an introduction to the theme of the song. And it is usually written, it's often written without too much melodic variation. Mm. And sometimes it's almost spoken sung. Mm-hmm. So we've listened to Tony here, and you're going to hear him set up the refrain. So what happens is the rest of the structure is what I would call refrain. He goes right into the title of the song.
Right, right.
It's a chorus, whatever you want to call it. I think it's called a refrain. I left my heart in San Francisco. And then repeats that. So we call the intro an A. It goes into a B, B. And then there is that's it.
So there's not like another verse after the chorus kind of thing?
It's ABB, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And the refrain is clearly the refrain. Like it's the most melodic part of it. It's the part that most people remember. And the other thing too is that if you listen to sort of radio edits of this song, like when I was looking up this song on YouTube, there was a live concert of Tony Bennett doing this song. Mm-hmm. He skipped the opening verse. He went right into the refrain.
Well, what do
refrain.
They do? They just keep singing the refrain over and over again.
I think
that's true. Well, that's true because there's nothing else to it.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because there's so many other songs of the, especially in the American Songbook, that actually have these intros that we almost never hear.
Yeah. They cut them.
Yeah, which is a shame, actually, because it does kind of give it a certain quality.
So you'll hear this, and it's also, he takes it at a fairly slow tempo, so the song doesn't rush by in a minute.
That's because he's
Tony
Bennett.
This would be a 60-second song if you did it up tempo.
Yes.
That's because he's Tony Bennett, the happiest jazz guy in show business.
Okay. Here we go, from 1962, Tony Bennett singing, I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care, my love waits there in San Francisco. Above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco, your golden sun.
Okay. Only Bennett. I left my heart in San Francisco.
Beautiful city. Have you guys been there? You been to San Francisco?
No, I have not.
No.
Oh, I have. I have.
It was just, the Golden Gate Bridge.
It is beautiful. It's very beautiful. Very. And Tony Burns has tweeted, "Hi, Tony. What we're talking about there, he tends to want a singable chorus. Start with the verse, then the chorus, then when it feels like it, more. When it needs more, I think, bridge."
That's right.
So that's an afterthought then.
Yeah. Wasn't there kind of like a C part before the second time he goes into it?
Well, you know, it's kind of, it is. "I left my heart in San Francisco, high on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air, I don't care." That's kind of like a little bridgey thing there, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
it's a little connector.
Because it kind of definitely, there was a kind of a big jump before he came back into the
second
verse.
It's a bit of a change, but he does repeat the same structure. Structurally, he repeats the same section.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
There's a bit of melodic change, I think, but there's but the bass structure is the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think of that introductory prologue there?
Oh, it's cool, it's so neat because it's so, but it's over so fast, you know. It's
I can almost see why people would want to cut it, because it is, it's a lot more specific. Mm. You know, if this did come from a musical?
No.
Okay.
Just a pop song.
But even if you're putting it into a different context, then those opening lines do give it a bit of a context for the song.
Well, they give it a story. Like a person's hanging out in Manhattan, they want to go back home.
Yeah. It puts some emotion into it, whereas "I left my heart in San Francisco, high on a hill it calls to me," you're kind of just describing San Francisco. There's no real personal investment.
Well, his love waits in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is a more common thing that was done, like, back in the day versus now, because I feel that now with songs needing to catch people's attention right away.
Yeah, definitely.
And
yes.
Hold their attention. I feel that, you know, by the end of that prologue.
You already skipped it.
People have already changed the next track, right?
Yeah. So. Well, I think it was definitely a Tin Pan Alley approach, having that sort of intro. Which is
And certainly in musical theater, it's very common, because what you're doing is you've got a character who's specifically singing that song at that point to further the plot, right?
So sitting
there, quite willing to listen to them explain what's going on, and actually, I found that this form was more common in shows for Broadway than common in popular songs.
Yes, certainly.
And you know, back to that, we talked about this before, that most pop songs came from Broadway shows during the 30s and 40s.
Yeah,
What could I say? You know, when you get a hit from a Broadway show now, it's because they pre-release one of the songs and push the heck out of it.
Yeah, it's
true. Like they did for Cats. They did for a whole bunch of big shows, Phantom. And they got somebody like Streisand to record it and then put it out there before the show opened and create some buzz. But it's
And those cuts usually don't have a pre-verse or a prologue.
That's true. They want to make it popular.
They're more pop structure. They go into verse chorus right away.
What's really interesting, though, is a lot of the the great musicals that we think of were actually, they were kind of jukebox musicals of the time. They were actually like containing the songs that were big hits at the time. So we think of "Singing in the Rain" as just being Gene Kelly's thing, but actually it was in many movies before that.
And Broadway shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there was one called something of 1936 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the name of a Broadway show. So it's like you say, they put a whole bunch of songs together, maybe strung a loose little plot between them.
Yeah.
I used to do that in the days of cabaret theater. A very loose plot.
Yeah. Which we always thought of "Singing in the Rain" was that one movie, and it was written for that one movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really not the case at all.
Right.
You know, it's interesting how we get a warped view of the way things were, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very
quite
true.
So easily.
So your other song that you selected, Bruce, is actually from a musical, correct?
Sorry, I was just distracted. You can give that to Phil.
Oh.
Yeah. We got a tweet coming in here.
"In the day referred to as verse chorus, most familiar is the chorus. See jbot.com, that's jbott.com, for verses you don't know."
Oh,
cool. Oh, thanks, Tony.
Introductory verses that are surprises.
We're going to have to put Tony on the...
Well, you know, I brought in another song, and...
It's my favorite. It's one of my favorite songs of all time.
My Funny Valentine.
I love that song.
It also has a prologue verse, no?
Yes, that's why we're doing it. This is a theme.
Well, do you want to do that one next?
Yeah. So I brought two songs that kind of show you two different ways of doing that. This is a show tune from Babes in Arms, which many of you heard of, by Rodgers and Hart, 1937. And child star Mitzi Green sang it. Well, that's interesting.
Well, of course.
So it became a jazz standard. Are you ready? You're sitting down. It's appeared on over 1,300 albums, performed by over 600 artists, including Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan? Chaka Khan?
Okay. And yes, get Khan. This. The Jerry Mulligan Quartet featuring Chet Baker will be inducted into the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry for the song's cultural, artistic, and historical significance to American society and the nation's audio legacy. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
For you folks who want to play this song or play along on your piano or guitar, it's in C minor. And
the saddest of all the keys.
But some vocalists use B minor. I'm not sure what Barbara Streisand uses here, but some people use the B minor. Frank Sinatra sang it in B minor. Ella Fitzgerald did a beautiful version in G minor. Does.
What I love about this song, apart from the fact it's beautifully written, it has a chromatically descending bass line and these wonderful chords on top of it, but the lyrics are so friggin' weird.
I know.
Because it's really saying you're not very smart, you're not very pretty, but I like you anyways, which admittedly most women say to me, but it's still such a, but it's so beautiful and loving, but when you really listen to it, it's a really almost
insulting kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think it's got to be seen probably in context, Babes in Arms, because probably there's a setup where she's maybe attracted to this guy, and yet everybody's saying he's not exactly Mr. Adonis.
Yeah,
I know, but, you know, and she's saying that to him. The other thing to make note of here as you listen, listeners in listener land, is we've got some Shakespearean language going on, which has been used off and on throughout Broadway. Behold the way our fine feathered friend his virtue doth parade. So you have to listen carefully to the introductory verse.
Oh, yes, the introductory verse. Do you know how many bars that is?
I don't know. It's two stanzas here, but you'll hear it because if we go right into the refrain, You're My Funny Valentine, right off the top there. There's a bridgey section, and there's no repeats in this song. Another reason why I chose it, because there's no repeats at all. It's just straight through.
Yeah, what a brilliant piece of writing. Okay, shall we hear it?
Yeah, go for it.
Behold the way our fine feathered friend his virtue doth parade. Thou knowest not, my dim-witted friend, the picture thou hast made. Thy vacant brow and thy tousled hair conceal thy good intent. Thou noble, upright, truthful, sincere, and slightly dope, be gent. You're my funny valentine, sweet comic valentine. You make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, each day is a valentine.
Barbara Streisand. Wow,
money knows,
Barbara.
Money knows.
Good work, Barbara. You know, the thing about Barbara Streisand is that she always made, I guess it's her arrangers, but her influence too, a very passionate singer.
Yeah.
She always made it a trip to the top note, right, to that big note, which, remember, in American Idol, they used to talk to the singers about, where is the big note?
No.
Where are they going to go start clapping, right? And she hit it on smart and
I have to admit, this is not my favorite version of this song.
Yeah. Because she takes it in a dramatic direction that's not really required.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to a great version, it would be Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes.
It's very sweet.
Well, because it's a very intimate song.
Yeah.
You know, it's really talking to someone in a very, very personal kind of way. And this is a very kind of big, you know, overblown. Yeah. And I know she's gotten this incredible voice. And,
well, that's one of the...
Can we just talk about the structure?
No, we want to talk about Barbara Streisand.
Yeah. 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 Like butter.
Her voice is like butter.
Okay.
No, sometimes she did an arrangement that didn't fit the song just to show off the voice, and I think that was probably okay.
Well, okay, fine.
So the structure, yes.
So the first two stanzas
is
an AA. It's a repeated thing.
Yes.
And then it gets into the refrain.
Yeah.
You're My Funny Valentine. So the sections after that... Was it an A, B, C, D, like a completely different...
No, it's A, A, B, A.
It's A, A,
B, A, right?
It's A, A, B, A.
Yeah, there's a B. There's
so
a B part,
the figure less than Greek is sort of like a bridge.
It's a bridge.
Yeah.
Why not sort of?
Or like a middle four, middle eight.
Because you've got so you've got these lines. You're my funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine. You make me smile with my heart. That's A.
Mm-hmm.
Your looks are laughable and photographable, yet you're from my favorite work of art.
Right, and then harmonically is the same section again, yeah.
Da 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 something totally different to bridge it and then back to the refrain at the end there. What did you think of that intro, like with all the doth and all that?
It's kind of cool, actually.
It's very surprising. It seems like it's totally wrong for the song.
I know. It's from some other thing. It's from 1937, though.
Well, that's true. But it's just because it's so, you know, the song itself is so personal and so, you know, direct one-to-one, and then that's sort of this thing, like it's talking about someone almost, you know?
Yeah.
We got a tweet in from Heather. Elvis Costello, who also covered My Funny Valentine, uses this structure in I Want You. It's a classic. Yeah. It's a great version. Elvis.
Cool.
Yes, Elvis.
Well, I think one would have to look into the context. Now, remember, this is Richard Rodgers and Lorenz Hart, one of the most successful combinations of songwriters ever for Broadway. I mean, they owned Broadway. And so Larry Hart, as he's called, Lorenz Hart, was an extremely sensitive and talented lyricist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't know the context, if somebody can tweet in what the context is for Babes in Arms, whether it was a story show or whether it was a collection of songs.
That's the real question, is for these introductory verse structures outside of the context, this song on its own, does it make a lot of sense?
Yeah. Exactly. So that's probably why they were cut when they went to pop music, because it was like, well, they're out of context of the musical. No one's going to understand what that thing means.
Yeah, it's true. Right? What's interesting, when you listen, like, I love the melody because it's a wonderfully twisting melody.
In that introductory verse?
Well, not so much in the introductory verse, but in the main, like, My Funny Valentine, you know. It's just, you know, the class that it's a combination of some beautiful chords and the chromatic descending bass line.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not much to it. You got the verse and you got the little bridge part and that's it. So there's really two sections of this song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like when they do it in jazz wise, you know, someone will solo over part of it. But it's interesting that there's not, I mean, each section is very musically complex, but there's not a lot of sections to it.
Well, you go back to Broadway writing again. So the purpose of a song in a Broadway show is to forward the plot, forward the character. It's not meant to stay around for a long time. If you look at a lot of the Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart songs, they are short. Because what they'll do is they'll just sing it through, and then there'll be some dialogue, and there may be a refrain if it comes back even later in the show.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Some dialogue. Maybe even the guy goes off stage and she says, "Don't change a hair for me." She might repeat it, right?
Oh, right,
right. So when you take a Broadway song out of context, it'll always, generally, someone can tweet in and say maybe I'm wrong, but generally the songs for a Broadway show are not long, belabored things because you want to move the plot forward.
And I know Les Miserables did that quite a bit where they would reprise music and melody with new lyric, new different character, different everything except the
Because you're building an entire show. So you've got a you're extending like a whole musical thing over 2 or 3 hours. So it's a different animal. Mm-hmm. However, what it shows is that these songwriters for Broadway could write some damn good tunes.
Yeah. Well, indeed.
That's right. So, Mr. Bruce, would you like to tell our esteemed listening audience what we're doing here?
Oh, yes, yes. It's that halftime show. Who do we have here? Oh, Janet Jackson. Okay, for those just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU, now on 1280 AM. And I hope some of you are listening. If you're listening on 1280 AM...
In Toronto,
please give us a tweet. Not if you're driving. We're having a special theme show tonight on song structures. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. So tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio, or you can email feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, very exciting. May 31st, we've got Liz Jeremin. June 7th, Blair Packham is back.
No, that's going to be an amazing show.
Of Song Studio and the Jitters. And June 14th, Carmen Toth.
Ah, yes.
Now, if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Sunday, May 29th from 1 to 4 at the Transact Club. It's free to join on the meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy musical details.
Awesome. Okay, thank you, Bruce.
Yes.
All right, time to rock and roll, Phil?
All right, well, so this song is... the song has had an interesting history with me. When I was a kid, I was always listening to the radio. I had, like, these huge headphones that actually had a radio in them.
Oh, cool.
And so you could, like,
listen
to the radio. Yes, yes.
The antennas and everything.
You know, back then you could listen to CFTR and or Chum, and it was AM. Mm. And for some reason, I think CFTR was hipper, but I'm not really sure why I think that. But that's sort of my memory.
Yeah.
But I heard all these songs, and it was great. I mean, you had Neil Diamond, you had Heart on, you had just really classic, fantastic songwriters on the radio. And you also had stuff like, The Streak and some real crappy novelty stuff.
What era would this be?
This would be, I guess, 70s, like, 75,
70s, yeah.
But just some great stuff, probably earlier, 75. But there's one song a few years ago, I was thinking, there's a song I really want to hear again, but I couldn't remember what it was. Mm. And I remember there was a part that went, Mama. And then I thought, I wonder what that was. And
then there was Rhapsody?
Well, then there was this one part that went, yeah. And they had this keyboard part, which I always thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't remember what it was. And then suddenly, I think I was looking at Paul McCartney stuff, and I realized it was Band on the Run by Paul McCartney.
Was that one of the ones you listened to in your Martian headphones?
Yeah, because it was a huge hit for
Paul McCartney.
Do you
remember the day that it happened when you first heard it? No.
Oh,
okay.
This was Paul McCartney when he was the Wings.
This was Band on the Run, which I think was the first Wings album.
Okay.
But I could be wrong about that. But what was interesting, because as a kid, you're listening to a song, and a song is a song. You're not really listening to it. But upon listening it again, I realized there's actually all this stuff happening in the song that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
Movements.
They had movements.
A lot of changes.
And there's actually, like, each movement is this story, is this little movie about this band that's in...
That's on the run.
It starts off with them actually being stuck in a cell, and you can tell they're kind of bored, and they come up with this idea about breaking out, and then they get out on... and then they start running and all this stuff. And it's, it was amazing because I just never realized that as a kid. As a kid, you're just going, oh, well, there's a different part of the song now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really pay any attention. But how, it's amazing how much of a picture he's able to actually paint with each little section of the song as it goes through. It's such a fun song.
Mm-hmm.
And, thanks to the gods of iTunes that I was able to find it so easily.
Oh.
All right, so shall we hear it?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you. four walls, sent inside forever, never seeing no one nice again.
It was Band on the Run by the inimitable Paul McCartney.
And the Wings.
We're having a discussion about there whether he used a band in the studio or whether he did it all himself. But you can let us know if you know out there in listener land. Phil, did you follow that structure? What the heck's going on there?
Well, there's just so much happening. For one thing, think about this. This was on AM Top 40 radio.
Yeah.
Think
in
about
the
how
70s.
And the whole thing, and it was never edited.
Yes.
They never jumped right to the chorus.
Which I was sort of surprised at, because I'm going, geez, I wonder if this is the radio edit. But then I thought, no, there's that other part, because I remember, because I used to know all these songs off by heart.
Remember Stairway to Heaven? That was on the radio. Yeah, these were not short songs.
No. Yeah. Well, I always heard they did, they liked Stairway to Heaven so much, because that allowed the DJ to go to the washroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Washroom break.
Exactly. So what kind of structure is happening now?
It's like A, B, C, D. There's, I don't know, there's an E section, then it comes
the section, which is the chorus,
Yes, it's...
Like, it goes A, B, C, D, E, and then it flips back D, E, D, E, D, E, pretty much till the end.
So it's really interesting. We were saying, like Janice was saying, which, as we were listening here, well, that section, he's written a whole new
like
song.
A totally different song.
Like, it must be daring, kind of audacious, really, when you think about it, because he's continuing to tell a story about a band, I guess, that's in prison, in jail, and then goes on the lam.
Yeah.
And then the jailer, they're searching for them, and then there's a
I
judge.
I wasn't banned on the lam.
Then there's a judge who banned on the lam. Okay, well, maybe you should call
Paul and see what he says.
Yeah, hello, Paul, it's Bruce. Got an idea for you.
We're still trying to get him on the show.
Yeah. Paul, if you're listening, you're welcome on the show anytime.
That's true. just go to the website and submit a couple of songs.
Submit the form so we know you're qualified.
Yeah.
But there's so many ideas in that song and so many sections to it.
Have any of you tried this before? Like,
well, I remember, like, I'm kind of like Phil. Like, I remember hearing it way back in the 70s when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Right? But I didn't really discover it again until, thank you, PlayStation, Guitar Hero.
Oh.
So it was on Guitar Hero, and they never edited the song Guitar Hero. You played the whole thing through. Mm. So it was like a 5.5-minute song on Guitar Hero. And it's like, and that's when I realized, I'm like, wow, this is actually a really, really interesting song.
Yeah.
It was buried into my subconscious.
It's almost like a medley.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, so many of those bits could have been a song in and of themselves.
Well, but the real question is it like suffering from multiple personality disorder? Is it too disconnected?
I don't think so, because it's telling a story.
So even if there's lots of changes, there has to be something that kind of ties it all together.
Okay, but let's look at the point. Let's look at the purpose of his song structure. So I'm just getting this at the moment. So I'm going to just share with you what I'm getting. He's got a very sort of wistful, quiet, lonely feel for the first two sections, A and B, right? No, for the first section.
Yeah.
Stuck inside these four walls. That matches the loneliness of being in jail. But then he starts on the B section. He pumps it up a bit. If I ever get out of here, right?
Yeah. He's
building it up. And then he moves to the next session. Well, the rain exploded, the mighty crash.
Don't forget, there's a horn section.
Well, there's a horn thing to set you up for this weird language.
Is that the actual breakout?
The mighty crash, we fell into the sun. The first one said to the second, I hope you're having fun, which is totally Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds to me. Like, where are we going here? I don't know. So it's not structure for its own sake. Each piece of music supports the lyric content, right?
Yeah.
Which is great writing.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just that he happened to put like these, this big, I mean, he went on to write like, what was it, an oratorio or something?
Oh,
he went on to
yeah.
do symphonic
oh,
music,
okay.
right? Because
oh, yeah.
Paul was the real musician in the band,
right?
Yeah,
he was.
He was really talented. Not that John wasn't or anybody else, but he was like a masterful craftsman of songwriting.
Totally,
Yeah. No, it's great. And I think if he had lyrics that were just like, baby, I love you, baby, I love you. We got to get the next song. Anyways, it's great. Tony Burns says, look to Freddie Mercury and Queen for more compelling and complex structures.
Yeah,
I was thinking of Bohemian
Rhapsody would have been perfect for the
show. But, I thought that would have been too on the nose.
A little too
Because I think
obvious.
Everyone sort of
everyone
knows,
kinda knows that.
Okay, what's the next song?
What have you got here for us, Neil?
Okay, so I've selected a song by one of my favorite bands, Sloan, who's a Canadian band. And this is actually a good segue because, I mean, from... Fading into Obscurity from... Yeah. It's written by Chris Murphy, who's Sloan, all four members sing and all four members write.
Fantastic band to see live.
Amazing band to see live. I just saw them last weekend, actually.
And they're Canadian.
And they're Canadian. They're from Halifax. So this is from a 2006 album called Never Hear the End of It. And it's called Fading into Obscurity. And again, similar to the Paul McCartney piece, this really... In a lot of ways, it kind of it starts with kind of a pre-verse, like every song we've seen up until now, that doesn't occur later on in the song. It never gets repeated, the structure of it, and then he gets into there's like I count about three middle sections. I don't know how many you guys are going to count.
This looks like a long song, is it?
Yeah, it's not that long.
What's four minutes?
It's four minutes.
Let's have a listen.
So let's take a listen.
so many stories I can tell. I had the world under my spell. Does this even ring a bell? I wonder, because don't you know who I was? Interest in me dissipated. All my methods antiquated. And friendless today, I made a name for myself when one could do such a thing. A reputation that's held together by a string. And so I chose to cherish those who think there's some purity to fading into obscurity.
Okay. Fading into obscurity
by Sloan.
Well, so, there's yeah, a lot of stuff happening there. Yeah,
but okay, but just very very quickly, that one section that does repeat, that's kind of what ties the whole thing together. Right?
How many sections are there?
I counted five. I think it's a little bit open to interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's never boring. I mean, no. It just that's one advantage of an unusual structure. Is you go, what? Where did that come from?
That's right.
Yeah,
it is really a love song to the Beatles, I think. You know, yeah. it is just so. There's so many
Sloan
bits of
this. Is a love song to the Beatles.
But it's a good thing to be. It's a good thing to do.
But again, like it doesn't suffer from multiple personality disorder. I think it's all very congruent.
Yeah,
I think it works.
So. It works.
From a lyric standpoint, I don't. don't know what happened there when he starts saying about the kids.
The kids and the elves.
Gone.
Yeah, I get a little lost there,
because
too.
I thought it was maybe about their fame as Sloane and how they're kind of like not – I don't know.
Yeah, but then he gets back into it. This cake is baked, but I much prefer the batter, which is really –
Well, that's a MacArthur Park reference.
Which is – oh, is it really? Yeah, but it's a great reference to what
– So hold on. What's that a reference to?
MacArthur Park.
Oh,
Someone
right.
Left the cake out in the rain. Jimmy Webb.
Yeah, there's a weird song.
I don't know if I could bake it.
That's a weird
Well,
song.
What we're going to do is we'll have to have a show – Weirdest lyrics of songs ever written.
Idea.
That'll
oh.
be our next theme
okay,
show.
Sure, sure.
MacArthur Park has to go in there with Jimmy Webb, great songwriter. Someone left it the cake
was,
out
was
in
that
the
Jimmy
rain.
Webb?
It sure was.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's in his book. Yeah.
That is just such a bizarre piece
book.
Of stuff.
There was a lot of, you know, mood altering things going on in that era.
That's true. We have to remember that.
I have to say that it's before 9 o'clock.
Transcendent experiences.
Yeah.
Right?
No, but it is interesting, and this is challenging me because we've got a meetup coming up, and I like to throw together a song for a meetup, just something weird, you know. So I'm going to do a little weird 3-section song, three
ABC.
Distinct different songs, but not chorus, verse, bridge. They're going to be something entirely different.
Right on. Yeah,
I don't know what
it
is yet.
Yeah.
Write a movie, Bruce.
Write a movie, yeah. What? This was a really fun show.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. This was good. Yeah. And the time has gone by so fast. Yeah.
It has. As it usually
We'll
is.
Be back next week with a guest.
Yes, we will be back next week to our usual format.
The usual format.
So, yeah, that is about all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. Please, thanks once again to our special guest, Song Structures.
Thank you, Song Structures. Will you come back again?
Yes, they're back every show, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank CJRU, the Scope at Ryerson, for putting up with us. Thanks to Janice Ho for so deftly handling those social media sites.
Yay.
And thank you, Tony Burns, for being such a dedicated listener and always tweeting in.
Yes.
We didn't hear from Sharon tonight, Phil.
No. Actually, Tony just said nice image song, but not something that is in danger of becoming an earworm.
Yeah, it's not hooky. It's just
I agree with you.
Yeah, listen to it again.
Yeah. Okay, listen to it. Yeah.
And last but not least, thank you to our home listeners or wherever you are. Please let us know what you think. Feedback at songtalk.ca, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Song Talk Radio. Please stop by the website at songtalk.ca, listen to archives of the show, watch live performance videos, subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Phil.
At Focused Creative.
You can follow Bruce.
At Bruce Harrett.
You can follow Janice.
At Janice Hoffman.
You can follow myself at Mondo Art. And you can follow Nicole at Nicole K. D. Donato. And good luck with your exams, Nicole.
Yes, good luck. You're going to ace them. We know you are.
Of course you will. And on that note, we are out of time. I'm Neil Modi. Keep on writing and have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.